It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 884.
Hey, what's going on? How is everyone? I'm Tommy Jagger.
Hamish Blake.
I thought. Nah, how are you? What's going on?
No, that's very good.
Is that the catchphrase?
He says, "What's happening, guys? What's going on?
What's happening, guys? What's going on? What's happening, guys?" Yeah, that wasn't. I knew I'd. That wasn't a bit that came naturally.
No, that's okay. There's YouTubers tend to do that. They have these catch cries that they say. Do you let the kids watch YouTube, and have they fallen in love with certain YouTubers?
No, I don't. I mean, not. I'm not anti it. I'm just like, I know it's going to happen, so I'm just not racing to do it. Speaking of kids, do you want me to keep up the construct that I'm Tommy?
No. Unless you love Ushies, because he's obsessed with, is it Ushies or whatever? Like the Bodhi.
I call them Ushies.
Yeah.
I resist you can those be as well. But you know, you're going to hear Hamish Blake's daughter screaming in the background from time to day for some reason at Tommy's house. And that's just that's going to happen today for Tommy's house. No, the YouTube stuff, luckily, like we haven't unlocked that Pandora's box yet. But you know you can't get the genie back in the lamp or... Pandora's
or underpants
back in her box or back in the well, that doesn't sound great either. But you know, once it happens, like I know other kids have got it, and like one of my nieces, she really likes these unboxing videos, and she has her favorite people that do it. And at first I was like, oh, this is strange. And then I watched it and I was like, I do get it. I think toy companies should be annoyed at unboxing videos, because remember, I think that it taps into that whole it's that fantasy. Remember when we were kids and you'd get like the Toy World catalog or the Toys R Us catalog? That's all you could see of the toy. Like what the marketing people showed you was like, that is it. You had to just imagine what could possibly be in the box. Like that was the whole trick of toys, was to convince you. And like Hot Wheels ads and Transformers ads and stuff, the whole trick of the ad was to convince you that having this toy would be way better than it actually is. Then you get the toy, then it's kind of a letdown. But it's like that rush of opening the box and seeing what's in there. And now kids just get that dopamine hit for any toy they want, and they just sit there and watch someone.
So do the kids not have to, like, is this the minimalist approach to parenting, where it's like, no, you can't have the toy, but yes, you can watch someone get it.
And I reckon it takes like 90% of the thrill of owning the toy out of it, and they kind of move on to the next one. So like watching this unboxing, you're like, they unbox it, then they build it. So it's like they unbox a Lego set, then they like time-lapse speed build it, and they like play with the little bits, and she's just glued to it. And I'm sitting there going, well, I'm going to hand it to this YouTuber. She's pretty good at this. She's got like pretty nails, and she like highlights the interesting bits of the Lego, and I got sucked in for like an hour watching these builds.
Yeah, I find that I can watch the weirdest stuff on YouTube. Like just like a day in the life stuff. Just watching
this is not a wild observation either, but the greatest wrong scoff, I suppose, of our generation was when YouTube came out as an idea, and they're like, oh, you know, Google's bought it for $3 billion, whatever. We're like, no way, man. They're the worst. The videos are the worst. Like, you've got to... Because we were just starting out in TV at the time. We're like, good luck, internet idiots. You have to make something great with, like, heaps of graphics and editing, and that's the only way you can make things. Wrong scoff.
Have you ever had a brand that's come to you and said, hey, would you do a vlog? Like, have you ever been requested to do something that is that very... I can't imagine you doing a TikTok. You don't seem like the TikTok type.
I haven't got into TikTok, and I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. I know people are into it, and it seems like fun for them, and that's fine. But I'm definitely like I left Twitter a while, like, you know, years ago, and I'm just go, well, it's great, and I get that people like it, but I'm so glad that I don't feel like I need to be there every day, like participating in that. I love Instagram, and I'm happy dipping into Instagram. Maybe I take days off.
Do you delete the app? Or do you just...
I just go, okay, well, I've had some fun there for a while, and I'm going to delete it just to know that I can for five or 6 days and then jump back on. So I haven't had anyone come and ask me to do a vlog as yet. I don't even know what I would... this is where I'm beginning to feel old. Like, I'm not 100% sure I would know what they're talking about if they said vlog. Like,
you know,
what do you
like
mean?
The holding the have you ever gone around with a camera? I guess you sort of did it with the Expedia stuff. That was sort of like a vlog, where it's like you're holding a camera and it's like very one-to-one with the audience.
Okay, yep. Expedia was fun because they were just like, look, you know, would you do something for Expedia? I said, well, if we could if I could like pick a thing to do, mm-hmm. and I just had an idea about like pretending to be like a travel photographer or like an amazing travel photographer, that was fun because I was just like, yeah, sure, we'll, you know, mm-hmm. we'll pay for your accommodation on your holiday and you do that and then everyone wins. Nah, just kidding. If the tax office is listening, there was no transfer of benefit.
traveling. You're doing this. You're an ambassador for Australia. What does it take to end up doing something like that, like a ambassador of any type, where it's for an entire country?
Yeah, big deal for the country. I guess, you know, the fun side of things is that, you know, I mean, my wife and I, we love traveling anywhere. Like Zoe and I love getting out there and going on holidays, and that's of course something that, you know, it's not a difficult one to go, okay, I'll do this and let's officiate this partnership. That's the fun side of it. Being an ambassador is obviously the other side of it, which is, you know, like going to the UN, talking to other countries, like stopping wars, making alliances. Like,
I'm guessing you're not, like, in the tourism bit, you're not covering that sort of stuff?
I don't tell them I'm a Tourism Australia ambassador at the UN. I just say, I sort of, like, mumble the tourism bit, and I'm Australia ambassador, so let's talk. And I've had a few calls from SCOMA. I've had a couple of tellings off because I've made a few soft alliances with countries that I thought could just be a bit edgier and, like, could give us a couple of, you know, could be a fun person to bring to the table. And he's like sort of telling me, oh, like, you know, there's a process to this stuff. We have to go soft or you don't upset China and all that. So I'm learning. You know, we'll refund the tanks to Venezuela. I made a mistake. You know? I'm sorry. It's my first week doing this. I'm trying to encourage people to have holidays and then trying to sort of organize a stronger military presence in the South China Sea. I mean, it's a big job, man. It's a big job being
the
ambassador.
There's a lot going on. Have you seen that there used to be a hotel? It was in sort of like the northern part of Australia, where it was like, I think it was like sort of like Queensland, like up sort of like top of Queensland, where it was a floating hotel. Have you seen that floating hotel?
No, I've never seen that. Yeah, like an old, like a steamboat.
No, so it was a hotel that was I think it was right next to the Great Barrier Reef, potentially. Oh, yeah. And
you hope it was built at a time where they understood like the ecological impacts. I'm sure David Attenborough wasn't just like not toilets happy about it. Toilets flushing straight onto the reef and stuff.
Well, I think it had that vibe because it ended up shipping it across to North Korea, but it just ended up on this rabbit hole of watching this.
Yeah, went to North Korea.
Yeah, and they like set it up there.
Geez.
I mean, this is one of those stories where I don't know enough, so I probably shouldn't have brought it up.
I should know as the ambassador now for Tourism Australia. I should know about the history of all hotels. I'm going to chase that up. See if we can get it back. Mm-hmm. See if we can get it back. Obviously not on the reef anymore. I think we need to protect the reef a little bit more than we have. But let's see if we can check it somewhere else. Check it on the Murray.
There was the David Attenborough doco. Have you seen The Social Dilemma? Have you seen this doco?
I have, yes.
So everything feels a bit dark at the moment. It feels like...
It does, doesn't it? I watched both of those, you know, three nights apart. So you're just like... I think if you watch those close together, you basically go, uh-oh, I've spent so much time looking at this thing, Q phone, that I forgot about this thing, Q earth.
Yeah. So annoying. And the only thing stopping me stress eating is watching like one of their documentaries on health, like, because I feel like that was a big thing. Remember Netflix, everything was like the sugar film, it was the
game changers.
Yeah, there was all that stuff as well.
Here's what I did like. I mean, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on the Attenborough docker. I mean, I loved it, and I just love him. You just like, you know, it's just one of those ones where he's so sort of ubiquitous. You're like, well, we don't have to have a David Attenborough. Like, you realize you're lucky to have someone like that like represents the brand of the wild, like of nature. That even at you know, there's footage of him at UN conferences and stuff, and like really going, hey, this is, you know, this isn't a drill, and we're in a tiny window now to save humanity. And you are just grateful that there's someone that people care enough about to get that audience, because there's probably hundreds of thousands of scientists that know the same detail and could say the same thing, but they're just not holding a crowd. And the hard thing about it in today's society is that it's a bit of a marketing game. It's like you're competing for attention, and for people to care about this stuff, you're competing with weird other forces that, like, of just churn and burn, clickbaity mm-hmm. news and stuff. And that's the kind of the real tragedy, is it? I think the hardest thing. So, A, you're grateful, you know, you're like, this, we're so lucky to have an Abra. And then you have that, it's a 90-minute doco, and I felt for that first 60 minutes, you just feel that knot building in your stomach, just going, oh, we're dead, man. We've blown this, and what it takes to get out of this is just such a bigger, it's basically saying to people, hey, don't be greedy and think long-term. And there's probably two trends that have increased over the last 100 years. It's be greedy and think short-term.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the sinking pit feeling you have in your stomach. But I think they knew that making that doco, and they do spend, I think, a good bunch of that last 20 to 30 minutes going, all is not lost. It's a tough balance. They must mm-hmm. know, like, it's no good making a complete doomsday documentary, even though that's probably what you yeah. feel like doing, because mm-hmm. that's the facts. But at the same time, you can't give people false hope to be like, but you know what, if you just use 50% less plastic, try and eat vegan once a week, we'll be fine. Because that's not the truth, unfortunately. Mm. So I think they do a good job of like of going, here's some broad things, some trends that we need to make habit for humanity that can arrest it, and it's possible.
How do you reconcile it in regards to you being of influence within Australia? And then I feel like there'd be a bunch of people who would say, oh, hey, I could imagine in a given day you'd be having people constantly saying, hey, this is the next thing that we need. We need people to know about this, and you're sort of the gatekeeper for all of these eyes and ears and all this sort of thing. How do you reconcile your influence and then working out what you do personally versus what you want to do or think you should do at sort of a more public level?
Well, it is definitely, I mean, the environmental side of things, and specifically, the environmental side of things is something I care deeply about. I think a lot about, I have the same massive level of anxiety as, I suppose, the rest of our generation, just going, you know, that's such a big problem. And of course, the only solution is action. And then, but I think there's also a part of me that goes, but you have 20 years experience in the public domain of knowing how people's attention works, when you can when you're going to lose it, when a message is going to be received. Like, you can just yell about something, but you will lose, like, you know, people will drift away, and you don't get that chance again. So, to be honest, right now, the snapshot right now where I'm at is, like, I do care deeply about this, and I'm thinking about ways that we can do this properly, because I think the real goal is to have people who weren't thinking about this think about it. It's great. You can stand up at the UN forum for climate change. I'm not having a goddamn memory, but I'm saying, you know, you can pick a, you know, you can stand up in a room full of people that understand climate change and understand it's an emergency and talk to them about it. And that's fine. But it's like, it's the people that we all know that are like, oh, I heard that, you know, it was being fixed, or it was being blown up, or, you know, oh, Australia's only 2% of emissions or whatever. Like, the people that have rationalized it and moved on, that's probably the people that is more effective to reach. So you think about that, and then you just go, that's what weighs on my mind. Because of course, and this goes for any cause, all causes are good causes, there's no bad cause. And so, you know, when people are in the public eye, I do think you've got an opportunity to help and educate people, but you also have to pick your moments, because contract with your audience, who are there for one thing. Like, you can't get too carried away just going, everyone will love everything I have to say. You don't want to snap that just because you watched a documentary. So yeah. I think it requires sort of like a measured response. But having said that, the environment, the future of humanity is something I care about deeply. I love humans. I'm very fond of the ones that live in my house. I would love them and their children to be growing up on a planet that is taken care of. And the one thing I really liked about the documentary too, which is, I think, a slight change to the message, which is the thing that I get frustrated with when you talk to people who are quick to write off, you know, climate change activism as just being, you know, too you know, too hysterically green or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not about, it's actually not about saving the planet, because the planet Earth will be fine. Like, well, won't be fine, but won't be fine by our definition of fine, but it will be here for another 10 billion years. It's been here for 4 billion. It will be here for another 10 billion. Like, it used to be covered in lava. It doesn't care how hot it gets. It's immune to heat. It's the animals that live on the planet that need it to be a very, 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 like, insanely specific temperature. And that's the difference between saving the planet versus saving the plants and animals that live on the planet and in the oceans.
Having Zoe and seeing like what she does in regard from a business perspective, like being like day to day watching how she operates and runs a business that is not just like a from a brand perspective, but it's like actual consumer products and things like that.
Actual business.
Yeah. Yeah. What have you learned or taken away, or can you give some insights into what it's like at the back end of a business where at with 2020?
The back end of a business is, you know, I just don't think there's any accidental successes. I mean, Zoe is like anyone, I suppose, in business is working flat out. Then on top of that, there's a layer of it, you're in the hands of the public, like you're in the hands of your consumers and luck is the wrong word, but then there's a layer of random chance that goes on top of that. But I don't think there's anyone that's successful that is just like not really paying attention on the back end and kind of is accidentally successful. I'm sure there's a lot of people that work flat out and aren't achieving the kind of, you know, the market penetration they would hope to be achieving. Mm-hmm. And that's that layer of chance that's on top. But, you know, Zoe's obviously running a super successful and loved business, but she... I think it's it is the real, people say the tip of the iceberg. Like I'm extremely in awe of the way she goes about it, because I also know, I mean, she said publicly a lot that she didn't set out to be in business. She set out to make, she's a great writer. She's an excellent communicator. She loves people. She loves women. She wanted to make skincare great and fun and it was that creative side that drew her into wanting to start the business. But the reality is, like, once a business starts to grow and you've got customers and you've got, you know, warehouses and supply chains and regulations and 55 different versions of a formulation coming in and then
social, like, impact the stuff, right? Like, if you think about
social impact, a huge amount of social impact stuff that I'm really proud of Zoe for stepping up and going, I want to understand and lead and learn more and set a great example to the women that look up to her and the young girls that look up to her, I think is incredibly admirable. And all of those things have nothing to do with writing funny stuff on the side of a moisturizer, which is what she got into it for to do. So I've seen her go through a massive learning curve. And then on top of that, though, there's a real difference between going through the learning curve at a company. Like, if you just were like, oh, I don't know, I just like scammed this job in finance, but I had to learn on my feet and I learned a lot. There's a huge difference between going through a learning curve when you just work for a company versus when you are the founder. And so you're learning a lot all the time, but you're always in the position where ultimately the buck stops with you and you're making the call on things. And for anyone that's at the top of a business or an organization, I think, and we've even, you know, even people I've spoken to in government, you have this perception that there's like a right way and a wrong way, a playbook, a set of advisors who are like, do this, we can't lose.
Yeah.
But it's just not the way the world works. You're just always making the best.
Like, as if there's this single truth. Like, the thing is,
there's no single truth.
Yeah. And I think, like, the other part of it is, it's like, not only is there no single truth, it's the truth from 2019 is not the truth from 2020. You're working on the Remembering Project at the moment, going back into the archives. How cancelable are you from all the shit that you've done? Like, doing 2000
so far, nothing.
Is there things where it's like, let's bury the lead, like let's bury this idea, looking at the run sheet? You know,
we haven't come across anything that so far is just gone, okay, that was a very different time. Something popped up the other day, but I can't remember what it was, which I'm sure if we dig, it'll be there. Same for anyone. What we have realized is in terms of what was true of yesterday and what was true and what's true today, of course those things shift, but it's more of the quality matrix, I suppose, mm-hmm. of going, oh, we thought that was great at the time, and it's just not the kind of thing you would do today. But I'm glad we're finding that too, because like when our radio show was big, like it's getting to the stage now where we're pretty old guys talking about the heyday. Like I think we're right at that point. We're talking 12 years ago. That's enough water under the bridge now. To like, if you're in year 12 talking about prep, that time has passed and you have become a different person. So it's fun. It's really fun to look back on. But I that's why we built this podcast. I mean, for people that don't know, this is just me and Andy. We kind of select a random day from the past and one talk break from the show, and we have all the run sheets from our old shows and all the audio. So we look at the run sheet and try and remember what would have been going through our minds that day. Then we listen to the audio. The reason we did it like that, rather than just doing a highlight, I mean, not that I think it would stand up, but just rather than calling it like, hey, here's the best bits or whatever, it was like, we know it's not going to be great by today's standards. There's like, that would just be embarrassing to be going, hey guys, this was funny in 2007 and it's bloody funny now, so laugh.
What's the context? That like Louis Theroux's got a series at the moment where he's going back to the archives and he's at home or whatever, he's going through, and it's awesome. It's like the same, like so much of the stuff is things that I've already seen, but he's bringing it into a context.
I saw an article about him talking about that, and I would love to see that. He also wrote a book, I think, where he goes back and meets some of the people that he's met on the journey. I was surprised the interview I read with him about that show was how many people he stays in contact with too. Like he stays in contact with a bunch of the people he's interviewed.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like his type of role, like it's a bit of a moment in time around, like it's very specific. Like it's sort of interesting to think of like this, that writer, documentarian, like he sort of follows that sort of BBC path. I wonder what that would look like. Like I wonder what the next versions of the Louis Theroux's in the world will be like.
Yeah, I mean, but at the time, I suppose, like 15 years ago, like to just be gonzo, like to do rather than to talk about. And that was his early stuff, remember, was really that notion of like, all right, well, I think there was like, you know, the plastic surgery one where he's like, I'll get, you know, lip fillers. I think he was going to get lipo. Yeah.
That was one where he did like a full nude shoot and things like that.
Yeah, and the swingers party where he's like, I'm going to jump in the pool nude. And I think early on, that was the hook, I guess, to be like, look, this guy actually does it. I remember the hunting one where he was just so clearly not down with hunting, and he was in like a game reserve in Africa, and he was in a hide and sort of had the crossbow set up. And I was just like, oh my God, he's going to... As someone that was in TV myself, like starting out in television myself, and you sort of think, you go, oh, well... What would, you know, if I was making this show, what would I be doing now? I was like, oh my God, I think he's going to kill this animal just because he's like painted himself into a corner. And then I was like, what are you doing, man? And then he whether it was planned or not, he backs down, I remember, and he's like, I just don't feel comfortable doing this. Which at the time I loved watching because I was like, oh yeah, I guess like being young and not, probably less secure about, you know, what you can, realizing you can and can't make your own choices. You can make your own choices even if you're on camera. Like, that's good TV, is watching someone be authentic. I just had that dumb idea in my head that, well, once you've said you're doing something on camera, you have to do it, because that's basically what all our stuff was, just like peer pressuring each other into like jumping out of planes and doing, eating weird shit and stuff. Like, there was no option of backing down in the stuff me and Andy were doing. So I kind of loved what I remember. That stuck with me, that he was like, I'm not going to do this. And that's now part of the doco.
Well, I think that he gets a lot of people talking about sort of like a faux naivety with things. Like, he's coming to this thing, acting a little bit dumb. Or,
well, he was kind of Borating it a little bit.
Yeah. And so what
like
I...
Like that to get you on side, like to... Mm-hmm. But not, I mean, very, very Borat light. Like he's, I don't, I think he... I mean, it would be up to him to make the call, but I think he does a great job of, he will never lie to get someone on the track. He will allow them to run their own race, He doesn't stop people that are saying things that we know watching are like bigoted or, mm-hmm. you know, homophobic and things like that. But he will never start that conversation, I suppose. So that was his art.
And I think that he's had sort of a transition from, if you look at the Weird Weekend, the early days, it was very much more sort of like an English guy in the US playing up that sort of caricature. Do you find with Hamish and Andy, the Hamish that you play on air, like I think it's a version of you, but I think at the same time there's, and I was even speaking to Jack about sort of the one-dimensional nature that you can sort of fall into with, if you're doing a show all the time, cackling Jack, can he, you know, we see what he's doing with, you know, Jackie Rose Studios and all that sort of thing, and it's so good, and you see, but you see how a format can force you to say, okay, you got to stay in your lane because that's what you're really good at. But it's also a little bit of a mind fuck because, so for instance, you, I feel like your character is sort of a little bit loose, a little bit lazy, you know, sort of probably not even like, don't have any sort of athletic prowess, all of these things, which like is actually not the case. And so like what is interesting is it's like, how are you going up that hill or whatever? It's like, you'll fucking destroy it. You've been up since five Goggins, this thing. And so how do you reconcile you as an individual, which you are even though you are Hamish fast and loose, you also have these like type A qualities. And so how do you reconcile?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a great question. I think there's a difference probably between like definitely going back in time. You're like, okay, that's, you know, when I was 24, that's probably a pretty accurate snapshot. So maybe a little bit of that character or that little bit of that version of me was more truthful at 24. Like I was a pretty chubby, sloppy, you know, unorganized dude. Yeah. And
you and Zoe's glow up are the only thing that's keeping Bree and I sane at the moment. It's like, well, at 30... Hayne was pretty sloppy. You remember he came back and he was probably my weight now. Like I've still got, can still Goggins this.
Post New York, I was,
you even shaved like, your head, which is what I did. Like there's a point where it's like, you're just done. So sad.
Do you know what? You shave your head because you go, I'm going to look like Travis Fimmel. You go, no, you look like a fat baby.
And so how do you transition? Or like, it's not even transitioning. How do you reconcile that people know you for something, but you are changing as a person?
I'm fine with, you just go, well, that's, you know that when you get into this world of going, you know, my name's Hamish, that's my friend Andy. Together, we do a show called Hamish and Andy, which is exactly us, right? And it's not that we, you know, we have tried to, you know, you try to keep that on air part of you as authentic as possible, but you do grow over time. So you're right. So there becomes a bit of a like, well, we've learned how to do this dance, right? Like we've totally learned how to fill 40 minutes of space with we can keep a rally going for 40 minutes, but there are some shots that we know are preferred, right? Like it's almost like a labor-saving thing. Like, you just know the areas to play, and not that you'd never want it to get sort of stagnant and boring, but you're always, I suppose you just are constantly evolving that chemistry and that routine. Now, there's a chance that personally, outside of the show, you're evolving in a different rate or in different directions. And then you are finding ways to go, well, you make sure that when you're back on the mic, and it happens slowly, it's like turning a oil tanker. I'm like quite clearly not the guy I was when I was 25. Like I'm 38 and I'm a dad and I'm interested in different stuff, but at its essence I think the thing that me and Andy have still is interesting. There's still kind of a fun friction between us that's like that generates sparks somehow but we're different people now. And Ando's obviously really different too. So we're different people now that are generating like different kind of sparks. So that's why, you can't be those guys forever. Mm-hmm. Like things do evolve and do change.
Because the funny, I feel like there's funny has a bit of truth to it And so if I use my own example, it's like I'll say I'm going to do things. I take these massive, you know, I'm going to do 1 million steps in a month and then I get injured or whatever it is. And so the character that I've built is the guy that doesn't, like, says he's going to do something and doesn't do it. And so that's funny. But then there's the thing that's also true is sometimes the most painful thing. The thing that, like, we know to be true about ourselves are the things that we want to change or that we don't like. I feel like there's definitely been times where, you know, TJ and I have said, I don't really want to, like, I don't want to do that bit anymore, or I don't, like, that's actually not me now, or, like, that's, like, I don't find it, even if it's funny from an audience perspective, there's this idea where it's like you feel like there's a disconnect between the joke and you as a person.
Yeah.
Have you had those scenarios where you're like, hang on, like, I don't want to be this, and is that coming from ego? I don't know. Like,
maybe it is, but in a pretty normal way, I suppose. Mm-hmm. we all have an attachment to our identity. We all think about identities a lot, and that's driven by ego.
Yeah.
I would say that honestly, the way that I've always viewed it is, you know, you want what we like doing is creating funny stuff, and so if it's getting to the point where it's like, well, it's now not funny because now there's a lot of reasons it could not be funny. One person could just be really uncomfortable, and then that stops something being funny. Genuinely uncomfortable, like just going, well, I'm really not interested in, you know, pursuing this.
What about caring something? What about, like, caring? So, for instance, it's like for 99% of things with Tommy and I, it's like, from a business perspective, I'm driving that and I'm, like, happy to do it and I love it. But there are obviously the moments where it's like TJ's like, actually, this specific business thing, I've got a different opinion on it. And then sometimes there can be friction because you're saying, okay, well, that's not normally that's not the place that you're normally playing in.
True.
So
that's part of being in a team.
But that's being – exactly. And so it's like, how do you play your character or play – like, work out the best role that you play within a team, but then also understand that, like, we're all constantly evolving and fluctuating, saying, oh, like, the thing I didn't care about, I know I said that I didn't care about this, but now I actually want to do this or this.
True. I guess it's like you got the on-air switch and the off-air switch kind of thing, like, and we just have a ton of fun on air, like, especially with the podcast. Like, it's a great playground. And I'm a firm believer in, you know, funny wins, not at the cost of hurting someone, but, like, hey, I got no, you know, there's no vanity in comedy. I got no need to go, by the way, you know, what, like, if something, if I, you know, if, like, this, if it was something about, I bet you couldn't do 10 push-ups. And if the joke required a slight suspension of disbelief for me to be the guy that couldn't do 10 push-ups and we were having a laugh about it, I think any part of me that stepped in would be like, well, actually, fuck you, man, watch this. And here's 10 of the crispest push-ups you've ever seen. That is just ego. That's not funny. But by the same token, it doesn't mean you have to deliberately pretend that you're an idiot to keep things funny. I think what happens is, as you grow personally, we've probably seen the show and our relationship evolve and grow into other areas too. And there are some things, you know, since we're talking really, really honestly here about the mechanics of comedy, there are some things that are just flat out lies about Andy, like me running the rumor that he smokes, which is, so the people that get the joke is just funny because it upsets him. Now, this goes back to the realm of, like, it's not all about not upsetting people because it doesn't actually upset him. It's more just like, if you really want to dig down on that joke, what we're doing there, I suppose, is laughing at the audacity of one person to make up a bold-faced lie about the other and the other being forced to deny it, or it being like a tacit admission on something that's so ridiculous to us because Ando, you know, well, I don't know, actually. No, I can't watch him all the time. I can't resist. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's, you know, if Andy did turn to me and was like, I find this really, really upsetting.
What about off-air? Like, because I feel like, I think offended. You're...
If he did that off-air, I'd go, oh, great, man. We
or not even about anymore. Like, on-air stuff. Like, I feel like from a... Because the funny thing, using a filter of funny is great, and it's because it becomes very easy around.
But not at all costs. Not at all costs. It's like,
yeah, exactly. But so from an off-air perspective, how do you reconcile roles in that space? So for instance, what you wanted. The reason I bring it up is because I wonder. It's like we're constantly evolving. We're constantly, like, everyone within a team is constantly on their own journey. And so the thing that you mm-hmm. wanted at 25 is different to the thing you want at 35. Mm-hmm. And so
I had a great saying about that the other day. I think it was a saying. I don't know if this is, I've attributed this correctly, but I think it was Jung. It was, what's true in the morning of your life is a lie in the afternoon.
Oh,
meaning,
that's good.
You know, you change.
I like that. And so how do you work out changing people within the context of, not so much from a content perspective, but relationships within business and roles and how it all fits together?
Good question. I mean, I've never really thought about it before, but my initial gut as an answer is I think it comes down to your priorities. So, And a balance of priorities too. So one of the priorities that Andy and I have always had is, well, we obviously like making stuff. Mm-hmm. And that the priority is we want it to be good. But one of the prerequisites for that being good is we have to be having fun. So if we're not having fun, we've got a problem, because both people having fun is a pretty key ingredient to the kind of thing we like making. So we know that's a priority, so we're like, okay, well, as we change, but the other thing that we have a lot of value on is, like, well, we want people to be having fun, but there's also a friendship side of things that we give priority to here as well. So if we're then on the personal side of things, we're changing, we're evolving, things are happening. If it begins to grate against the friendship or against mm-hmm. if one of those things begins to grate against each other, that's probably where you stop and go, well, what we need to make some changes here to maintain some of the priorities. And maybe if this idea of making stuff has got in the way of us being friends, you know, and we have prioritized being friends above the show, that's, we're going to have to make a choice, or we're going to have to mm-hmm. dial some things down and turn some things up. And I suppose it's just how you, that's the path you navigate the whole time. That would be my, That's probably, in my mind, how you rationalize changing people against an evolving relationship.
Mm-hmm. Is there a go-to mechanism if you're feeling that way, where it's like, oh, we're going to take a break, or we're going to, like, let's not chat before the show? Like, are there certain things mm-hmm. where mechanisms that help?
I guess unconsciously we've had them over the mm-hmm. years, whether it's just catching up for a beer or a walk, or it's a spontaneous chat in a hot tub overseas somewhere. Mm-hmm. I suppose different. I mean, we're a two man team, and this, I'm sure the same rules would apply, but be different for, say, a three person team or a mm-hmm. four teenager team, or a team of eight old women. Mm-hmm. You know, I suppose it just comes down to checking in, and mm-hmm. each team's going to have their different dynamics of how they check in and how they listen to each other. And then, you know, I suppose it's what I was saying about Zoe before, is like, there is no playbook. You're on your own. Yeah. You got to try and just make the best choices you can and track on.
And then, so Radio Karate, where there's four of you, there's Ryan, Tim, and then you and Andy. Are you a business guy? Do you like business? Is that something, like, you talk about Zoe, you know, she likes writing funny shit on the side of, you know, products, and then it becomes this thing. Is it something that you learn to love, the business side of it?
I think everybody probably has their different attractions to different mm-hmm. parts of it. I'm aware of business. Like, I was studying commerce and stuff at uni. I'm interested in business. I'm fascinated with, I suppose, like, you know, I am interested in businesses, and I understand I'm interested in the fact that we've been able to, I mean, the real reward for us, I suppose, at the bottom line is, here's a thing that we've had fun doing, and mm-hmm. we got to turn it into our job. And I suppose the process of turning it into a job was business. And there is a business element to that because then you've got money in the mix. And I suppose that's sort of what Zoe's gone through. It's like, here's a thing I thought would be really fun and I love doing. But to get to keep doing it, I had to make it a business.
Yeah.
Or that was the choice that was made. And so the reward is you get to keep doing your fun thing. And the cost is you have to be good at business to some extent. So, but you know, in terms of me personally, do I love the business side of things? If it had to be a binary yes or no, mm-hmm. I'd say I'm, you know, if it is, and I don't think it ever should be a business versus creative, but I am, my brain is just drawn towards the creative side of things, the making of things, but I'm happy to intellectually think about the business side of things too when mm-hmm. when it's required. But Ando has a real knack. He has a, you know, just like a, it's in him. It, mm-hmm. He has, you know, we sometimes laugh about business shark or business snake, but he's not a shark or a snake, but it's in him. He's that's how he thinks and strategically, he's just got a very good strategic mind and he just, I don't think he can turn it off. And I don't think he should. Like, that's one of his superpowers.
It feels like at 2020, and it's been happening for the last few years, businesses talking about failure and talking about, like, there's a real move. Like, I think when the Daily Talk Show started and with big media company, this has all come at a time where the format of our show is the highs, the lows. We have, like, you know, blow ups on the show, but then, like, you see every light and shit. Like, it's like, okay, let's just communicate. Let's try and be as honest as possible. When the mic mm-hmm. turns on, what's the worst that could happen?
Yep, I like that.
And so, but Hamish and Andy was created in a time where that really isn't, like, that's not an expectation. No.
And it's not an expectation for us. And it was never a... It's
not your shtick. And so, but that's content. But so that's a content thing. But what I'm wondering is, it's like, you see, like, look at, you know, your best mate Rye and how much he's evolved over the last couple of years in regards to, like, creative fulfillment and just really sort of understanding what he wants and just, you can see it in the work. And so... Yeah. There's a huge amount of evolution, and it feels like if I listen to the way that he speaks, it's of that slightly more transparent vulnerability, sure. more sort he's, of he's, talking about the failures. Brené Brown. Exactly. And so how do you I'm just fascinated with, say, even like Working Dog or, like, you know, Radio Karate, any of these businesses where it's like, how – obviously it's not all of a sudden – going to be this thing where it's a switch and it's like, okay, we're having these more sort of vulnerable meetings where we're all talking about our feelings and really deconstructing and working out. Like, do you think that that's a thing? Is that, like, it, from a business perspective, even
you mean doing it publicly or just
not even publicly. Like, I think that it's we're in a unique situation with our show where it's like we do it publicly, but taking that off the table, taking off, like, any form of, like, narrative building or shtick that's on air, the actual idea of emotional conversations or going through mm-hmm. and, like, oh, this is how this made me feel or how's everyone going, like, being really tapped in yeah. on that. And you might have some examples from, like, Zoe's work. Like, do you find it feels like business in general, Bree works at Hey Tiger, they're always always talking about their feelings. It's all like everyone, like, and I feel like especially in COVID, it's like that's the question everyone's asking. It's like, how are you going? And I feel totally. Like there was a time in business where it's like we don't really want to know, like, we care about everyone, but yes, at the end of the day, we're not using a whip. Yeah.
We want you to be happy so you can keep performing your job.
Exactly. And so how do you sort of perceive this sort of movement into opening up as you
I think it's terrific. I think the whole look, I mean, I'm a big proponent for, you know, happiness first, and I think a big part of that happiness is understanding essentially how you feel and what you want. Like mm-hmm. and where you're going, but also if you're in a team, to have empathy for your team and for what they are caring about too. And So I think those conversations are critical, not just for business, but for life to go. Mm-hmm. If you've got someone on your team that's feeling something, you know, and you genuinely care about your team, you want to hear where they're at and you want to hear their thoughts. And, you know, the more people can express their vulnerabilities, their hopes, their fears, then in an ideal situation, if you're working with people that you love and there's an element of love in the team, that's how, you know, I think that the love for each other is the engine mm-hmm. with which you evolve.
So then if you look at, say, how Rise changed over the last few years, how does that then change business? Like, and how much
well, thought? I suppose it's like, what do you want? What do you want from your business? I mean, I'd say that what Rise doing is the exact, is a great personification of somebody following their heart and their gift to be happy. He's mm-hmm. making things, and that's what makes him happy. The, you know, a flip side of that would be making, it would be inserting a word before things, like making profitable things or making, you know, mass appeal things that are therefore like, you know, could earn money or whatever it is. But that's not what he's doing. I think that's, mm-hmm. that's, so you know, you're always going to have that conflict, I suppose, between going, if you, sometimes you know, if making money is the thing that we're talking about in terms of business, mm-hmm. and that's the thing that makes you happy, I'm sure that there's lots of ways that people can make money if that is what they've decided is the thing that is their calling. I don't think for many people that's genuinely the answer. Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about, like, what do you want to do for your work, which is what do you want to put in the world that you're proud of, that you feel that you've got a sense of direction or stewardship over, and then any success that comes from that you feel like you've earned. I think that's a more satisfying place to come from for putting work into the world.
Do you feel the pressure in regards to having a team? Like, do you feel the weight of, hang on, like me deciding whether I have another year of podcast in me or I have the year of this or that, it has a big impact on like a bunch of people's lives?
It does, but also I always just view all this stuff we're doing as like a bit of a bonus. And mm-hmm. I think if you think about the flip side of that, just to go, well, am I really working with a team? Like, if I was like, no, I can't do the podcast next year. I just can't do it. Do I really think the team I'm working with would be like, well, bad luck. That's what we need it. So you're doing it and we mm-hmm. don't care how you feel. And no one I work with, I mean, most of all, Andy would have that perception.
Yeah. And so on the hard times, so when things get tough, so obviously, like, fun is the goal, but as you can see with Zoe, it's like, it's not always fun. Oh, yeah. It's like stressful, it's painful, it's people problems, it's everything, right? Across the whole mm-hmm. spectrum in business. So then what's the filter? Because I think that you are the epitome of fun. Like, that's like your brand value. That's what you're all about. That's what you communicate. But there's probably like a lot of people who are in the creative process where it's like, I think I have fun, but mm. I'm also depressed, or I feel like I hate working with people, or like all of these mm-hmm. struggles. How do you sort of deal with where fun sits, where mm-hmm. hard work and pain sit? Like, yep. does that make sense?
Well, I guess we're talking about fun. There's fun and then there's happiness. Mm-hmm. So they're not the same thing. So you can have people like, yeah, okay, I have fun at work. But that same person could be like, but I'm not happy. And
so what's the distinction for you?
I don't know. What's the distinction for you? I guess everyone brings to it their own. I'd say that probably
would
for
be
me,
an example where you're having fun, but you're not.
Well, I would say happiness is a state, right? Happiness is a state that, mm-hmm. that requires that. I mean, there's lots of people that do research on this stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, conventionally held wisdom. And
I've got all the books. I haven't read them, but I do.
Got all the books. The Dalai Lama's had a few things to say on it, but it's a state, right? And mm-hmm. I mean, generally, like I would say if you could boil down the wisdom on it from what I can gather, it's, you know, happiness is it's an internal state. Like, it's not relying on external factors. I mean, the Dalai Lama seems like a pretty happy guy, but you know, it's not externally based. But then there's having fun, and I would say, like, to me, having fun is a fun thing to do, but it's an action. You know, it's a verb. It's a way to spend your time and your life. But they're the two things that require different work. You know, happiness is a thing that requires work. I mean, mm-hmm. in the best possible sense, it's sort of like, well, you know, you're happy when you're being a good husband and a good mm-hmm. father and a good friend, and you know, you're doing the work that you feel is worthwhile, and you're being a good community member, and you're thinking about others, and like, I think those are the general. I mean, I'm massive. Like, I don't think being happy is that easy, but it's, you know, that's generally the things that feed into happiness. And then fun is, you know, going on a sea biscuit with your mates because that's a fun thing to do behind a mm-hmm. speedboat. So, you know, I think that they're two mm-hmm. different things, but that's my own take on it.
Yeah.
So as someone that has fun or champions
fun's
fun,
almost fulfillment, I think is in a broader perspective, maybe it's like, because if you take out the comedy part of it or that sort of thing, like
it can be fun to make people laugh, but that's not the only type of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I very much enjoy that, but, mm-hmm. but there's other ways to have fun for people.
And so the fulfillment bit versus the happy bit.
But that's a great point, actually. That's probably a really good way to put it in terms of fulfillment, because if people just love bird watching and they go out and they nail a spotted warbler, they're having fun because mm-hmm. they're fulfilled. They had a goal or a need and they fulfilled it, and they're having fun, and you know, it's not hurting anyone. That's because I don't get too close to that warbler. Just watch, look, but don't touch. I mean, it might be hurting the warbler to feel. It is a bit perverse when you think about bird watching. But as long as the warbler doesn't know they're being spied upon. But you know, for someone like me, like, I like making people laugh. So you mm-hmm. go about your day and you do something that makes people laugh, and I feel fulfilled because that's something I enjoy doing. And we're probably, me and the birdwatcher, are both having the same amount of fun.
Just finally, like, on a awareness piece of like how you're feeling, how do you know if you're in a rut, and how do you then sort of
flip it around? You think I'm in a rut?
I'm thinking about the audience. I think I'm thinking about the audience, right? I'm thinking about, like, so many people are in a certain state right now. So like, I'm thinking about, like, if you were to do a temperature check around, you know, not actual temperature, we probably will eventually be checking temperatures, but if you want
a temperature check, go shopping at a chemist warehouse. They'll get you as you walk in the door.
Well, no, I think that it's what I seek, definitely, like, what I love about podcasts, what I love about all of these different things is it's like, I enjoy, it was like Steen was on Resilience Project, and you hear like the story or whatever of, like, you know, just people struggling, and you can see, okay, you can have this, you can have a lot of things right.
Yeah, you can be the funniest guy in the world. Like, Steen is, I think, easily one of the funniest guys in the world.
And so that's the thing. Like, I feel like you can, and so many, you listen to sort of Marc Maron or you listen to, you know, those types of podcasts, you hear, and for me, it gives me comfort because I'm like, I feel fulfilled, but heaps of things, like, I don't feel good all the time. And so what I'm always trying to reconcile is it's like, okay, like, what's the goal here? As you've described, happiness isn't necessarily the thing. It's about, like, fun or fulfilled. It's like, it's service.
Happiness isn't about having fun, I don't think, solely. I think, to me, there's a giant distinction between being funny and being happy.
Yeah.
I like to think that I am both a lot of the time, but I put more personal investment into the happy side of things rather than the funny side of things.
Well, yeah, and I think that, like, I guess the reason I bring up the rut stuff is it's like, you're someone who loves to travel. You, like, you know, during wintertime or whatever, you go away, all that sort of thing. Obviously now, Australia, there's a lot of great places in Australia.
Well, there's over 10 million, I assume.
10 million
spots in Australia.
To travel.
Over 10 million.
Is that suburbs? Or what's that actual?
I guess it's just spots, so you can't really tie me down to my statistic there. I mean, you could just be like, there's the car park at the Ryback Beach. There's obviously the in the water at Ryback Beach. There's sort of halfway up the sand. These are all different spots, and you can travel to all of them.
You definitely, yeah, you've got that UN vibe there. So on the, so I guess the question is, it's like there's the disruption that we've all felt. And I don't want this, like, I don't want the conversation, I guess, to be that sort of COVID thing, but it's definitely, I feel like, highlighted what's been important to us and listening to ourselves and being like, oh, why do I feel agitated? Or hang on, actually,
and definitely
going outside
this week,
is,
right? In Melbourne, this week where we're like, you know, days, and we're coming to the end of whatever week it is of lockdown, which is, we will look back on this, I hope, as like a very unique, I hope it's unique in the sense that we don't have a third one, but. Mm-hmm. We'll be like, wow, it's darkest before dawn right now. Right? Like, you know, there's two cases today, but we're still locked down. And yeah, everyone's like, their batteries are at... We've been in power-saving mode for a long time, I think. But
so what does that look like for you, I guess? Because I think you're a really optimistic person. I think that that's what... I think that you probably... which makes a lot of sense. It's like you've got this platform. It's like, well, let's be careful about the words that you use and the way that, like, falling into that trap of being negative. But it feels like at the moment there is this opportunity of oscillation where it's like if the guy who has the perceived most fun in Australia has the best job, the best family, like all of these things, like I feel like it's such an opportunity for it's like, okay, like
there's no doubt that it's been a strange time for everyone, no doubt. I mean, but my personal mindset day to day is I'll come back to optimistic in a second, but my personal mindset has been there's still so many opportunities for good things to happen today, little good things, I know we're super lucky because we've, this week my little boy's gone back to school, but we've had both kids at home, you're wrestling on the couch, you're doing silly things, like life has slowed down, but it hasn't lost its chance. Just because you can't travel to the spots you want to travel to, you've still got opportunities to do things. Look, I'm not being glib about it too, I get they're harder and we're extremely, I preface this by going, we don't have, we're not small business owners, we don't have anyone in the family that's sick. There are people that have, you know, we're not healthcare workers who just have faced an unbelievable burden. We are part of the society, we're part of the extremely lucky part of society that went unburdened, but just inconvenienced. So I do understand it's a funny one because you don't want to minimize the mental health impact of that time, but I'm also, at the same time, I hold the gratitude of going, but we still had so much that we're able to do and to enjoy and to love. And we'll never, like it or not, it is happening. And we'll never get, you know, again, I'll never get my little girl being 3 years old after this year. So now's the time to enjoy it, like it or not. It's not 3 years old on a beach, but it's 3 years old anyway. And she's still her and being silly and funny.
So an example, I guess, would be, say, I feel like this happens a lot in relationships where Bree will say, I'm not feeling great, I'm pissed off, or it might be something like a personal issue with a person, right? So it's like, this person's pissing me off at the moment, or this happened at work, or whatever it is. The playing the positive role, which is like, it's all good, like we've got this, or it's like, or that person might be going through things, like playing the sort of like higher optimistic thing is a way to get kicked in the head, right? Like, because like what Bree wants
solution to stop feeling bad.
And so the thing
that's
is
just men and women stuff. You've just stumbled, like that's just marriage 101.
So what do you do then? So when Zoe's saying like this is shit, you have, well, it's very lucky, like we get to fight on the couch.
No, you don't say it then, you idiot. You just get in a relationship. You say, I know. And then you stop because the next thing you want to do is solve it. And that's not what wives and girlfriends want.
Yeah, sure.
They just want an I know. And then later on, you try and find a way to go, but hey, isn't this terrific? Because look at look at how cute Rudy was in this video I took of her this afternoon. And then Zoe will go, hey, they just went to bed. Mm-hmm. Show me later. Okay, yeah. Wrong time again. And then later you show them something. But it's, you know,
what do you need? Like when you're feeling, when you're like, oh, this person's I'm not happy about this, or when you have a moment of not this perspective, which is how I'm feeling right now. I wanted to go for a fucking bike ride and it's pissing down with rain. This was my only chance this week. It's like
I've got. Yeah, I do think you come up with strategies, and everyone's different. Hey, like, luckily for me, I do have exercise as a way that I'm a fan of. Like, I've got an exercise bike.
You love rain. You love cycling.
Well, I also don't mind riding in the rain too, because I've sort of got a bit of a theory of going, well, I like training for bike rides. I like sort of having a big bike ride to train for, and then I'm sort of like, well, if it's raining on the day and you never rode in the rain, you would be in trouble.
It's like
on
learners.
The day,
so you need to be driving.
You got to do your hours at night and stuff. Yeah. But honestly, I do like bike riding, and I destroy myself. I've got a Watt bike at home, and I probably deliberately. Yeah, I like bury myself on that thing because there's like a level. Well, I found for me personally, like mentally, I like the benefit to of going to a level in a workout where, you know, in the same way that meditation just forces you to be present, or that's the goal of meditation. When you are in a hole of pain of your making, like no one cares that you're in the basement covered, just completely killing yourself. But when you've made yourself suffer to that extent, there's just nothing. You know, it's a very honest place. Like, there's nothing else you're thinking about than trying to mentally get through to the end of, you know, the next minute or whatever it is. Mm. So that has been a helpful thing for me, I found, in lockdown. Just skunking off to the basement and sweating it out.
Optimism, you talked about that.
Yeah, right. So interesting. I mean, this whole thing that we're going through, which is an unknown end to a situation we weren't expecting. There was a famous dude. I'm paraphrasing here the article, and I'll preface this by saying, to all members of the military, I understand that what we're going through is not the same as being in a prisoner of war camp, but in the analogy of it being an unknown ending to a scenario, there was a dude that was extremely famous. I'm sure it's easily Googleable. I think he was held by the Viet Cong for 7 years, right? And so got like pretty much from the start of the Vietnam War to the end. And he was, you know, he was interviewed about, well, obviously, like, you know, how did you go? Everyone else you were captured with over time, they died in the prisoner of war camps. And like, how did you mentally make it to keep going? Was it optimism? Like, you know, you must be such an optimistic guy. He's like, no. Those were the guys, the optimists were the guys that I knew would die early, because it was the guys going, all right, by Christmas, we're going home, like definitely by Christmas. Then Christmas would come and go and they would give up. Like they had set all their hopes onto something, and that, I suppose, is optimism. Like they'd clung tightly to the goal, and when that goal didn't happen, it broke them. So he was like, I just had faith that one day, eventually, this would end and I would be a better person for it. And so I was, you know, I really admire that in the sense that he for him, it was much more about a state of being right now rather than it needing to be a concrete solution at a certain date or a certain time that would make him happy. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough thing to do mentally, but I thought it was a pretty interesting perspective on going, well, that's kind of what it comes down to in anything in life, because, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, 2020, we never saw that coming. But what year do you see coming? No one sees any year coming. Like, every year's insane. So,
but we're such narrative builders. And so the thing is,
and pretend that, like, every year from 2000, like from post September 11, like that was the last surprise we had. Yeah. And then everything else has been predictable and worked out perfectly. Uh-huh. And then 2020 came along. And it's just not true. Like, life is, tomorrow's promised to no one. Life's not a guarantee for anyone. So I think, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, and I'm certainly not the most qualified by any stretch of the imagination. But for me, I try to just go, well, you know, it's the here and now is all you can really look after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting talking about this stuff, because I think that it's like, it's not necessarily, like, why I love speaking to you about it is because you're someone who's smart, you read stuff. But I think that the optimism side, like, I think you're one of the most optimistic people that I speak to. Like, I think that it's, and so.
Then that's probably just faith, isn't it? That's just faith. I believe in good at some point in some way, shape, or form. But I know it's a fool's errand.
I'm not implying that you're going to die because you're too optimistic.
No. But I suppose it's a fool's errand to go, here's what good is going to look like, and it's going to happen in this way on this day. Yeah. That's the bit you don't know about. But I think you can, if you look around, you can find a way to cultivate enough faith in good anyway, somewhere, somehow.
So do you look forward? Are you excited about anything coming up?
Yeah, totally.
What are you excited about?
Well, I'm excited. I get excited about circumstances rather than, I suppose, specific things. So, yeah, we'll probably be opening up soon, you know, in Melbourne, you hope, that restrictions will ease, and then that means more randomness and chance and excitement and options will start flowing back into people's lives, and I think that will buoy people. And honestly, this thing that Don and I are doing with Tourism Australia is super, like, it's a dream gig for both of us, because we are going to get to go on these crazy holidays and adventures under the guise of ambassadorship. So honestly, like, you know, that's one thing that I'm a big believer in, the 80-20 rule of holidays, which is like 80% of the fun is the anticipation and the planning, and that's the stuff we've been doing at the moment. So even though I might not end up going on the 25 different trips that I'm planning online, it's still been a fun pastime to
How are you planning it? Are you using certain apps or how do you keep
it? I started Pinterest. I'm bad. Honestly, it is a Word. I mean, it's a Word doc where it's probably the least. There would be people out there that have put their whole lives into inventing these apps that are meant to be for exactly this mission. And then they'll see me like on notes, just typing in manually, must visit, must visit Bay of Fires. Like, no, make a Pinterest board. That's why we invented the app.
It's Fat Fridays. And so could you, I know we haven't eaten, but if you could eat something that's a little bit indulgent today, that would be good. Have you got anything on the list?
What I'll be doing. Well, usually on a Friday night, Zoe and I, you know, we'll have a martini and we'll go through this silly dance of me going, I'm going to do some chips in the air fryer, and her going, no, I don't need them tonight. And then going, come on, I'll just do a few. Then I do a few. And she's like, why do you make such a little bowl of chips? And then I have to do more. So I already know we've got chips on the horizon tonight. But the other thing,
do you
I'm
cut
loving
the potato?
In the
what sort of potatoes do you use?
No. We like, you know, deal? Either I don't mind a Coles, like you just get like a Coles beer battered, like frozen chips.
Yeah, that was mate, this is a new thing that I've discovered. You don't have to get them delivered. Like, because delivered chips, like, they're always soggy and all that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Right? It's very difficult to get a chip to your door.
But
in the
frozen
right
chips are pretty inexpensive. So, like, it is the biggest joke.
They're like $2.50 for like a kilogram of chips.
And so this is, I think that there is something, I haven't executed on this yet, but the idea of never, like, if I was really organized, always having drinks in the fridge and having the chips. And doing the order, putting the chips on. You're only ordering the burger. You have you're getting your drink, so you don't have to. You're not paying sort of $4 for a drink.
Yeah, it's temperature. It is a temperature trade off because, like, unpaid, but schnitz make a great chip. Right?
They do.
That's if you're eating it in store, it's like you can't beat it. It's cooked. I mean, there are two different tastes: the air fryer and the oil. The air fryer is like a 97% perfect situation. But an oil chip is still an oil chip, and I will grant that. But you've got to eat it at the source. Like a restaurant fry is going to be great. Mm-hmm. But you're right, for home, I think I've got to a stage where I'm confident the air fryer wins with the right brand of chip, the right time, the right temp in the air fryer.
You're just using baked. So, for instance, we don't have an air fryer yet. And so, like, we have like a lot of random bits and pieces. Like, we've had the juices, we've had the sandwich. Sure. I went through a stage of
air fryer so much more important in the kitchen than a juicer, by the way.
So the thing with an air fryer is I'm trying to make health conscious decisions. Is this a health conscious decision?
I think people, yeah, it has to be healthier than deep frying a chip because there's no oil. So
there's a spoon of it or something. Yeah.
Well, yeah, even with just frozen chips, you literally just chuck them in the basket, close it up. They come pre-battered, but you're not putting them in oil and like...
So what are they doing? It's just doing something.
No one knows. It's magic, Josh. All right. No, I think they're just in a box of hot wind, which is what the air fryer is.
Isn't that like an oven? Are we not...
No, but it's... I think the wind factor is what... I think because it's like so fast, the wind is like a Dyson in there.
It's a fan force.
It's like a tornado.
I remember when fan... Yeah, yeah.
It's fan force, but it's tornado fan force. Okay. I think because it's like a little box, they can really concentrate the wind. And that seems to be the magic. But it, I mean, I don't know how they do it, but it's essentially like anything that would benefit from crispiness, that is what your air fryer is for. Oh. So I'm putting frozen apple pies in at the moment, super crispy crust and juicy on the inside. Fried chicken we've been doing in the air fryer. Oh.
Do you make your own fried chicken?
So you marinate the chicken pieces like in a buttermilk throughout the day and then literally just dip them, just then put them in flour and then put them in the air fryer. And you do, you do give that like a light spray of oil. If you've got like a canola oil or something, you spray that. But that's it. And then it just crisps up.
Perfectly. So you'll have chips tonight?
I will have chips tonight. But I will also have an apple pie.
Okay.
And then Friday's ice cream.
Any nugget days, brand? Like, are you eating nuggets outside of like your...
No, I mean, I'm still hit a Macca's. I'll still hit a Macca's. I hit a Macca's nugget yesterday or the day before. But I will... I'm not air frying nugs at the moment. Not through any reason. But I feel like McDonald's is a... I feel like it's much harder to replicate the quality of a McDonald's nugget at home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's my honest. Yeah, so basically, fun and happiness are different things. And they're a lifelong quest for to find happiness. And a McDonald's nugget is hard to replicate at home.
And I'm projecting in regards to a rut. I must be in a rut. Do you think? Was I too negative?
Oh, no. No, you're not too negative. I was just sort of like, you know, it maybe it's me projecting from you going, but you know, surely you just can't do the same old Hamish forever and do you feel like you're in a rut? Okay.
But it's fun, like there is something fun. There is something fun, like, yeah, it is. I didn't even get to ask you what your biggest challenge is, which is the coaching question. What's your biggest challenge?
Yeah, I'm reading the same book at the moment, so I feel like I'm too ready for the question.
Well, this is the problem.
Because then I know you're going to go, and what else? And what else?
Thank you, Hamish Blake.
Total pleasure.
Have you got Lego Masters? Are you working on that? Is that coming?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we actually do start filming in a couple of weeks, but this is long tail promo for season 3, which I think will air probably, you know, May or something next year. Can I just say quickly on the...
Audio Technica.
I just said to Josh before we started recording, I was like, wow, these mics are really good, which I genuinely mean. I've been doing a bit of podcast stuff from home and I'm on a shitty mic. The Audio Technica ones are incredible. And then Josh said, you can keep it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I feel like I'm going to do a huge ad for these guys because...
Well, they're an audio partner. They are people... I'll give you a tip with microphones. For whatever reason, USB microphones, condenser microphones for the most part, a condenser microphone is an always on thing. So it's like listening, right? Whereas a dynamic microphone, it is activated by noise. And so the thing is, dynamic mics, which you're using, being nice and close, this is what all of, like most broadcast
That's what microphones, you want, right?
Like the dynamic type of thing. There's some, like, So I would highly recommend that one's the dynamic mic. It's like the AT something.
It comes with a little mini stand. Which when you're like, hey, you can keep it. And can I keep the headphones? Because they look brand new.
Yeah,
you can. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So because like I tore the box and the bag on the headphones. It's like, oh, no. Because I was like, Josh, you know, you dropped these at my house last night. And I was like, he's gone to so much effort boxing this up. As I was unpacking them, I was like, man, he really cares about his gear. These look like mint condition. Like I was feeling ashamed at the state that I keep my like headphones or cameras and stuff in.
I don't have boxes.
As I was unpacking it, and then I was unpacking the mic box going, look at all the cables. He's like done them perfectly. But it's brand new.
Yeah. You can get them like Officeworks and stuff. Like it's that microphone is only a $150 microphone. It's really solid.
It's really solid. I mean, Rode do good stuff too. Like I feel like I'm...
Yeah, Rode, can I just say what Rode do great? They have their Rodecaster. So if you
Rodecaster at Andy's house, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. So if you want to plug in multiple microphones, so if you're doing
and your phone, you can just Bluetooth your phone to the Rodecaster, it's unreal.
Rode's great for the Rodecaster stuff. The USB microphone... the Audio Technica dynamic mic. I've said Rode should do a dynamic mic. It's the problem.
Do they not
do
a dynamic mic?
They don't do a dynamic
USB. This could be a separate podcast. You want to make this a separate podcast? We can. It's audio chat.
The one thing that I would say, there's no. I don't like the Yeti. The Yeti is the real big one that looks like a pill, and people don't know where to point it, and they end up pointing it the wrong way. But the stands. There isn't a good USB mic stand, and so that there 100%. That's actually
you've given me this solid.
That's a
mic
hodgepodge.
Stand.
So that is a.
I understand.
It's a Rode.
It doesn't quite fit the top.
Exactly. So what I've done is I've taken a Rode mic, their desk mount stand,
Frankenstand,
and then I couldn't get the Audio Technica stand or whatever. I couldn't get the I couldn't rip off the holder, and so then I had to find just a mic holder. So it is a Frankenstein solution. But yeah. The thing is,
I don't know if you heard me before I said Frankenstand. Pretty Frankenstein. Good.
Yes, exactly. And it's
I missed it.
It's great.
I did hear it.
No, I heard it. I think there's
well, you heard it twice now.
The one other tip I'll give people is a solid internet connection. You've been great. You've been tethering. Use USB if you've got data on your phone and you don't have great internet.
Is this going to cost me money?
yeah, this is going to cost me
money. Oh, no, I only have 1 meg. I have 1 meg complimentary emergency use per
You're
month.
You're in Fiji. This is going to cost you a fortune.
Yeah, I put my VPN on and put myself in Alaska.
and the other thing is you want to have the microphone nice and close to you. Any microphone. Nice.
Two-finger rule.
Yeah, any microphone where it's like, I can place it on my desk. And it's going to sound good.
That's terrible.
There's a thing called a signal to noise ratio. And so if you imagine, if you've got a computer fan and the computer fan's making noise and you've got the microphone not close to your mouth.
There's so many they sell with you. Just chuck it on your desk for gamers and stuff to like do Twitch stuff. I'm like, this is going to be a terrible listening experience. Because you're going to hear the kitchen as well as you're going to hear what's happening in your bedroom or whatever.
There's been a huge shortage, though, of microphones, just so you know, across the board.
No doubt.
Like, you can't...
Every single person in the world has a podcast now, so they've become like face masks. Like, we all need two or three of them on the go at one time.
Well, surely, they're going to build.
I broke the stand. Here's my only negative for Audio Technica. Not their fault at all, but the little desk stand that this mic came with, because, you gave me this big Frankenstand, very funny way of describing the thing that you've given me. I thought the attachment on the little stand clips onto this mic, and so I went to screw it off. And I was like,
that's what I was trying to do.
Pretty tight. Snapped it.
Yeah.
I'll show you.
And so that's what I was trying to. Does it actually come off so you could use it or no?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. And so that's what I was hoping. I think a tip for any of these brands would be to give you a mic holder that you can then put on your own stand. Yeah. So you can have a desk stand or whatever it is.
Because it looks, I don't know if you can see that, like it looks like it's going to.
Yes,
unscrew.
It's going to turn. Yeah.
And it just completely snapped the plastic.
It's, so yeah, it's that's the one area that they. But podcasting, all of this, all the tech. Is going a long way. We've got a website called makingpodcasts.com. We do like free training. Like, we've got like all these blog posts on the best USB microphone.
Let me ask you this. How soon until, because the one thing you notice about podcasting is just like, there's just cables everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the cable solution? Is it either a mic that has like a vacuum cleaner style retractable cable in it or is it, and it's just cables galore. Or are we going to get to a stage where we're like good enough to have wireless microphones and wireless headphones?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is...
Is 5G going to solve that? Is this the Internet of Things?
No.
You tell me, Josh. You're younger. You understand this stuff.
No, I don't think so. I think that what will... The problem is that... So with the Rodecaster specifically, why that's such a good product is because it's all built in. It's all built in, right? Whereas like with what we do... The Frankenstein stuff, this is the business we're in where it's like taking random bits and putting it together.
Yeah.
And
you
so.
You have to be like, it's like an episode of Robot Wars. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what this is the next thing that I was talking to Mr. 97 about, our producer, is getting a Pelican case. And so I want to get to a point where I can drop you off a Pelican case, you open it up, you plug in the power, and it's got lights. So it's got lights, it's got the camera. It's got a microphone. It's got a 5G modem. And so I don't have to say, hey, plug in your internet, do all that. You open it up and you are remote and we connect straight into it. We have remote desktop so we can control it all. That's where I think that, because the thing is, like radio, like they're pretty slow. Like when it comes to like outside broadcast stuff, they use these really expensive.
And it's all in-house made. Like you see so much of the stuff. Like maybe. Yeah, anything you want to do that's like, roaming around. Like in the early days, I did a thing on the Fox Breakfast Show where I was controlled. This is a bit of, this is a bit of stuff that wouldn't fly these days. I was controlled called Street Bitch, and I just had to do whatever. I had to wear an earpiece. I think it was loosely based off, you know, the Man Show had the kid that they would like control.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and tell him
to like say stuff to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it wasn't that young, but I was like 19 or 20 or something. Mm-hmm. And I had an earpiece in, and I had to like get in a cab or like go in a lingerie store and say weird stuff. And the actual physics of how that worked, like mm-hmm. the telemetry of how the system worked, was I had a mobile phone, like an old, like those was like a Nokia, mm-hmm. that had a Nokia jack coming out of it into this massive box that split it, because they wanted good audio too, mm-hmm. or they wanted better audio, because it would have still just been coming through the phone line. I wasn't recording it locally, so this massive box split it into like an XLR for a microphone that I had to like put up my shirt to like clip on to have a, clearly wearing a lapel mic, and then they would like hope that it was just not noticed, and then an earpiece that ran into my ear, because they just didn't want it on a hands-free, they wanted it like on a better system than a hands-free, yeah, sure. And then wear a backpack to like house the whole thing into everywhere when I had to have the backpack on.
So what, mate, just like, take your back pocket back off, you're in a
like getting into a cab just with a backpack on, squashing it down on the seat, the guy's like, do you want to put it in the boot? Nah, I'm all good. And yeah. Just like the electronics just digging into my back, but you know, they were like, there's no other way to do this. That's how we have to do it. So they were like soldering it. Like Andrea, the technician at mm-hmm. Fox FM, she was just like soldering it in the workshop there to make it work. So radio does have, everywhere you look, there's like those made up in-house solutions, because they're very clever people, but they're just, the technology doesn't exist.
Yeah. And obviously there's just not scale. But now that everyone's doing a podcast, you can see the companies doing all of this sort of stuff, like internet, for instance. Like you talk about where you live and not having great internet. We have in our office, so there's an ISP that would, like an internet service provider. What they'll do is they'll take a fiber connection that's in those apartment blocks. So here, mm-hmm. I get at home 400 megabits up and down, like ridiculous speed, mm-hmm. right?
Very
and impressed. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say, really. But I'll finish the story anyway. So
thanks for having me. It's been great.
What they do is they take the buildings where there's fiber, and they provide point-to-point internet. So at our office in Abbotsford, we couldn't get NBN. And so what we have is a small little tower that is point-to-point with an apartment block that's 400 meters away that gets fiber.
It to them for their internet.
Yeah. So we get 100 megabits up and down at our studio, which is good. But the problem is the thing that we're all talking about now, well, not everyone, probably just me, but latency. So it's like when you do a speed test, if you go to speedtest.net.
Is that the ping?
Yes, yeah, the ping. You want the ping to be low. And if the ping's... So for instance, like we can have this great conversation. This is what always annoys me about podcasters, where it's like they don't spend the time to work out the tech, and so they're clenching their asshole the whole show because they're worried that their internet's going to die or whatever it is.
And then you often notice the latency blows out the longer the connection is. So mm-hmm. towards the end of the conversation, you're more out of sync than you were at the start.
Well, so here's one other final tip, which I think you'll find interesting. So if you're recording video and audio, if you try and sync the audio that you've recorded locally, like say on your computer with a camera, a lot of people have this issue where it's like you actually need to make sure that you set the sample rate right. You know, it's like 48 or 44.1.
Yeah.
So most people in radio or whatever, they record at 44.1. If you record 44.1, which like GarageBand, all these different software will do that as a standard. That's what they use in like sort of, they used with CDs back in the day. But what that means is 44,000 times a second, it's sampling the audio. 48K is 48,000, right? And so what happens is video uses 48. And so if you try and sync video from an audio file that's sampling 44.1, you start to... 10% out. Yeah, you basically end up drifting out. And so you'll sync it at the start, like, perfect, we're in sync.
Yeah.
And then you're an hour in, you're like, oh no, we're out of sync.
6 minutes out.
Exactly. And so the big thing, this is something, as people are doing more and more video, make sure if you are filming and you're using a camera that whatever you're recording on audio-wise, you set it to 48. because it's...
You're right. I did find that interesting, but I'll be honest with you. While you were telling me, there was a part of my brain that I was just like, and this is why I've got Tim. Or whatever. this is the bit where I turned to Tim and be like, did you know about this, mate? I'm not responsible for this. You just said it so it doesn't... Well,
it's very easy. It's very easy.
I don't even care that it's very easy. I just don't want it to be my responsibility.
Just on your Zoom, on your Zoom recorder or whatever you're using, your portable recorder, just from now on, switch it to 48. Because it will just mean that you have less issues. And
But I will get someone to do it for me.
Well, it's been back.
I'm not completely not that Hamish anymore.
Yeah, it was really the engineers are loving it. The This Week in Radio Tech, one of my favorite podcasts, where they have engineers from radio talking about the technical stuff.
Wow. I mean, I know we've gone really, really long for today, which I've loved, but I wonder if anyone sees the length of this podcast and goes, oh, wow, I mean, it's gone long. Mm-hmm. I should jump to the end to see if, like, that's where all the good stuff is. And then they just get this bit.
You might remember the first time we ever did a podcast, we'd only just really met, and I was so excited to have you on Josh Speaking. It was 2013 or whatever. And I was just crapping on as I am now. And I said, oh, I'm just going to go piss and then I'll come back and let's finish it. And you're like, oh, man, like I think my car's actually, like I've got to go. And so it went from me being like, hey, man, I need a piss. Can I be back? To that's the end of Josh Speaking. Thanks for listening. So if you can at least give me the honours to say, I'm out of time. I've got shit to do.
You have to wrap it.
I've got to wrap it. Thank you for wearing the Daily Talk Show hoodie as well. That's yours to keep. I mean, you must get so much free shit. It's actually a very good hoodie. Yeah, it is. It's ANS colour, good quality merch.
That is true. And I'm trying to just not, I'm trying to purge my wardrobe. But I will wear this and I will wear it with pride. But there are some where people are like, I mean, this is a bit of a stitch up because he'll know who he is if he mentions this. But I ran into a dude that we used to, I know, sorry, you're trying to wrap me up, but quick last story about a jumper.
Right. Yeah, I've really got to go. But
sorry, I know you've got a PSA. Hang on. So there was a guy that we all like years ago, I would say the thing that transitioned me from being like kind of 10 years of just doughiness, like not fatness, but doughy unfitness, just no concept of fitness, there was a bunch of about eight of us that started boxing at this gym in Richmond, which is sadly not there anymore. It was like this real old school gym called Leo Barry's, and we loved it. Like, we were just like, it was floorboards, and it was like an exercise museum sort of thing. Like, it had those dumbbells that are like solid steel with the round ball on the end, that, strong bone, like the strong
bone. Like medieval sort of thing.
Just kind of like just lift up a cinder block kind of thing. And it was just old school boxing stuff. So it was just like flip tires, hit them with sledgehammers, punch a heavy bag, that's it. Like, you know, it was just full of like sayings like, you know, there is a cost to achieving greatness. It's 100 barrels of sweat. Like, pay now.
It's like Gold's Gym in the States. What's the big one?
That's like Arnie's sort of one. But so we love this place. It was just like super dusty and the mats, because it was floorboards and stuff. Like, when you had to do like sit-ups and ab work and stuff, the mats that they had were like the ones you remember from primary school that are all like stacked up in a pile. Those slippery vinyl mats and stuff. So anyway, loved it a lot. There's a trainer there that would sort of take us, and it was good. It was fine, but the thing that drew us together was like the group, and we loved the group, and we loved how old school the gym was, sort of thing. And so when it kind of ended, like, we all floated off. We all put in like a good kind of 4 years there. We all floated off. Anyway, I ran into the trainer the other day, and he's like, mate, how's it going? You know, I'm doing, he was training someone in the park, and he was like, do you want to do a session? It's like, oh, man, thank you, but I just sort of exercise when I can. Like, it doesn't work for me to have a trainer because I got kids, and it's really about just going, I've got 45 minutes right now. I can do it. Like, going next Thursday at 10 just doesn't work. He goes, mate, I've got a jumper for you. I got a jumper. I finally got merch made. And I was like, oh, that's, I don't, thank you, man, but I don't. And he goes, hey, mate, wait here. Well, what size are you? What size? Well, go on with Zoe too. Like, yeah, but mate, we don't need one. I don't train
every
with you.
Business has, I like to think that a podcast is in the it's an easy sort of stretch to say.
And there's a reason to wear this jumper. Yeah, it's like you've been on the show. Mm-hmm, and as I'm sure there's a reason to wear that particular fitness brand's jumper, because it's like I train with this person and I'm happy to be an ambassador. But the framing of being like, I've finally got them done, man. Come on, come to the car. I've got a bunch for you. Like, you've got to, like, and he was like, I know it's taken me ages to get them, but I've finally got them. I was like, it's not the sell I'm looking for here. I'm not going to wear the jumper.
It's a real issue to be honest with merch in general. Yeah. I feel like I fall into it where it's just like, you'll notice that I put two stickers into the box of the Audio Technica. I've got so many fucking stickers.
So much effort to get it, you're like, now I've put all that effort in, I want to share it.
The thank you card, you know, the thing that I wrote thank on that says the Daily Talk Show. Like, we spent so much on the, and I didn't even, but I was going to put it in an envelope. Like, if we've got the Daily Talk Show envelope.
That's a great touch. Okay. But just saying to someone who has no association with the show, hey, I want you to wear the jumper. And I just had to say to him, man, I'll be honest. I have a lot of jumpers. I'm not trying to show off.
And we're getting into summer.
It's a low-level flex, but I have a lot of jumpers, and this I will just give this to charity. So if you want them to have it, you should just give it to charity.
I think that's really good that you – because I feel like I'm very bad at sort of – like that the decline, like being – I guess you would have to have gotten good at that, because I could imagine a bunch of businesses being like, mate, we've just given this thing for you. Like, it's funny, you know, like PR people – you know, they'll send you something. It's like,
I didn't want it.
Yeah. You got this thing for, like, we're going to give you this thing for free. And then it's also like, just any sense that you should have to post. Like,
we're very clear on that from long ago. We're like, in fact, we went through, Zoe and I, because it's usually handled by, I'm sorry, I know you have to piss. It was usually handled
don't need to. I'm dehydrated.
I've reabsorbed it. Usually handled by, like,
can I just quickly, before you say this, you know how, like, I was saying how good the Mount Franklin fizzy. So this is a mango one. The problem is, this is just because you're on, you've got more clout. So maybe who owns Mount Franklin? Whoever owns Mount Franklin.
Coke, I think.
Coke. Guys, can you make a bigger can for the mango? Because at the moment, this is 250 mils. I can't stay hydrated on a 250 mil can. I'm pretty sure
they would. We've done some stuff. We've done ads for those guys on radio. No,
so I think they have the bigger ones. They have the raspberry ones. Have got like a 330. But yeah, my point is, I definitely don't need to piss because I'm.
Also, there's raspberry. So there's a 330 and mango gets a 250.
Yeah. So this is the whole thing. I think that what they must do is it's like we're trialing this specific flavor, and Brie rations. Yeah. So Brie rations it. So because I went through 10 cans yesterday, which is way too... David Attenborough is pissed, and I'm pissed at myself. Yeah. Like, that's too many cans.
You're just in your pants. That's like litres of fizzy water.
And so anyway, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, just on the the free stuff. So there's like 10 kind of companies that I guess manage it for people to just like send them stuff to go, you know, whatever. Like, hey, you know, these are some new shoes. Like, oh, this we're a boutique wallet line, or, you know, like, hey, we're doing soaps. And it, like, there's a lot of reasons you get sick of it, but you get sick of it because, like, you didn't ask for this stuff and you didn't want this stuff.
If you want to be a minimalist, there's like a lot of junk.
And it just, your whole house is like full of a giant box with straw packing and a card from them going, we thought you'd really be into these, you know, these like three packs of dried sauces. It's revolutionizing pasta. You're like, if I want, like, you know, there's probably $8 of value in these sauces here. There's a massive box, like we're talking like five or six shoe boxes worth of packing to send you this with and some cellophane over the top and the hype of like, look at these new pasta sauces. And it's just so, it's like there's tons of waste. It's so pointless. You're like, when have you ever seen us be like, oh my God, thanks for the sauces, I'm loving them. Like, so we went through a thing a few years ago where we were like, had to just tried to say to all the PR agencies, like, I don't know, we're obviously on the list. Please take us off the list. Like, we're just chucking this stuff out and we just got to get, like, we just want to be off the list. So, thankfully, we're kind of off the list. So, a few things sneak through sometimes, but yeah, we're off the list. And it's
any good terrific. Free thing? Anything where you like that was epic?
And that's the other thing too. So, often they were sent to our management and then we'd like go and, you know, they'll be like, hey, you got a bunch of stuff here. And you go, there's like nothing here.
Sure.
That I would have voluntarily gone, I want that thing. There's stuff where you're like, well, I can't throw it out because it obviously has a use. So someone's like, here's some boots. You're like, well, they work as boots.
Lock picking thing could be good. Can you pick the lock within 30 seconds, or is it going to take you too long?
No, I haven't learned that yet. But that's a great example. That's something that I wanted, so I bought it. And that's the other way this can work.
Beauty.
Hey, if we want something, we'll probably just buy it. So please don't try and guess out of the 10 trillion things that you can possibly buy on Earth. Please don't try and guess the few that we might want. If we want them, we'll buy them.
Well, it also must be hard around like people who it's like, oh, you don't need to pay us for this. Like just the day-to-day shit. Like I could imagine like...
not that much, but our policy is always happy to pay.
Yeah. Happy it's easier.
If someone... it's always a weird thing, but if someone's like, you know, and no need to... Because it's just always like, mate, it's, you know, if it's a sort of like, well, I'm just trying to think of an example. That's
like a restaurant. I did, like, so the one and only time this like, has ever happened, where it was like, no, we're like a PR. It's like, hey, will you come to this restaurant? It was so, clearly I also knew that the influence that I have isn't there for this, like even for this meal like that I was getting. But just this weird thing of like, they're bringing food and then you finish up and then it's like, there's no bill, like,
oh,
see, like a part it's of the transition is you need to like pay and then you leave. There's something very weird about having this experience and then going.
And I agree. And me and Rye had that. We made a, we did a video for, there's a pizza place we love in Carlton called Capitano and we know the guys.
So good.
It's the best.
You know, like the square thing. Like
Grandma's pie. And it's honestly the best pizza. I think the best Italian place in Melbourne. Love it. Just, you know, it's so the go-to good. Place. Anyway, they're like, well, we're going to do delivery. This is pre-Corona. This is like last year. They're like, we're going to do delivery. We're going to pick up pizzas and stuff. We're like, you know, and they're like, we know that, like, you know, because we know you guys, would you be interested in doing something? We're like, yeah. So we thought of this sketch to film and we had a lot of fun making it. And we're like, please don't pay us. And they're like, well, you can just have free pizza. If you guys do that. And I was like, that to me seems like worth, you know, way more than money. The idea that we could go to Capitano and eat for free would be incredible. And in that moment, I got so excited because it's like, this is my favorite restaurant. I can't believe we get to go here and eat for free. This is all I've ever dreamed of is...
And then the panic attacks.
So then we did the thing. Then we start going to the restaurant. Then I feel terrible at the end of the meal. Everything you order, it looks like you're being an asshole. Like as soon as you're like, actually, we will get a pizza, and it just looks like you're being a jerk because you know you're eating for free.
Fucking pizza!
Can you believe this guy? And so I was like, honey, this is backfired because now I don't want to go because I don't want them thinking I'm an asshole who's going here because it's for free. And so then I rang the owner. I said, can I make a deal with you? I'm having a birthday party. Can I just get, could I please just get, you know, like 20 pizzas?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so much easier. Pasta.
Well, that's how we
fit. And then I'm done. And then can I go back to paying because I don't like this awkwardness of just wandering out at the end of a meal. And we did it. And it was an amazing, great party. Everyone loved pizzas. Perfectly timed. It was great.
Well, yeah, we'll converts from that. Like it is delicious. The square, the actual... It's almost like a bread. Like it feels like it's almost like a bread sort of thing, right?
And they bake it in the cheese and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's probably somehow 2 kilograms of cheese on an 800-gram pizza. It's it's terrific.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, they do delivery. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah, they do, and their cocktails are great too. I mean, I'm off the system now, so you know this is a genuine endorsement. This is not just me trying to get more free
influencing
pizza.
Is a weird space. I wonder what, like, surely influencers won't feel like. Surely influencing will change. In regards to like with everything that's happened with COVID, like HOSPO, surely we just all need to agree that like, let's just post about businesses.
Oh,
let's just
and support that's what businesses. Me and Zoe's policy is like, and Zoe's a huge advocate of this is like, if something's good, I will post. I will pay and I'll post because she's like, I'm in the position where I can. I don't need it to be this weird exchange to get like free shoes or whatever. I think she has a great policy and does a great job of like actively going, these are good. These
it's
are
like
good
Hey Tiger, like Bree's the marketing director of Hey Tiger. It's like people are like, oh, how did Zoe post? It's like, oh, like there's no deal.
She just likes it.
Which
likes I think it. Is and that's what you should use in social media for, to be like, hey, I assume that if you're following me or you're aware of me, there's a chance you'd be interested to know what I think. And here's something I think. I think that's great. Having said that, with something like a Tourism Australia, like that is a commercial deal, but it's just, but the reason you would do something like that, or for us, is to go, yeah, but this is a thing that can only, you know, if we just started going, hey, out of nowhere, we've decided we'll be ambassadors for tourism, people would be like, who told you could be the ambassadors for tourism? So it felt more natural for us to be like, well, that's why you'd take a deal like that. as opposed to, you know, all the other ones that come across the desk to be like, well, this is something we love and you'll do. So I guess that kind of checks that box in that way.
Mm-hmm. Did you do the ad pre-COVID or was that a pain in the ass to do? How did that happen?
We filmed an ad with me and Zoe just as COVID was hitting. So it was like mm-hmm. people were wearing masks and stuff on set. Because initially the ad is and will be again one day is us like in the Kimberley or like, mm-hmm. you know, in all these cool places around Australia. That's what we're so excited to do. We were meant to be filming that like in July and then it all slowed down. So then they sort of reshuffled to go, okay, would actually, it feels a bit more appropriate to do an ad where we're, you know, like at home mm-hmm. working. And then I feel, then there's like another ad that's like a voiceover, just me doing a voiceover that I recorded in my bedroom under my doona to go with their ad. So yeah, we were doing that now. And then as stuff opens up, we can actually get out there and keep making some stuff where we're actually in the cool places that you can go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Thank you, Hamish Blake. For people who are listening on the podcast, we record video for all of these, so they're all up on YouTube. But if you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe. The Daily Talk Show on all the podcast apps. What podcast app? Do you have a specific one that you use?
Well, we're with Podcast One, so our podcast.
Yeah, but sure. You'd have to answer.
Well, I am going to answer truthfully, and I use the Apple podcast.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's easier. It's easier. It's and the thing is, all the Podcast One podcasts are on Apple Podcasts. You don't have to use
and they're cool with app. That wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. It's a Daily Talk Show. Thank you, Hamish Blake, subbing in for Tommy Jacket, and hopefully you get out of that rut real soon.
Stop faking, you faker. See you, man.